obvious knock-on effect. And maybe just I am informed that we were all informed that for reasons beyond Mr. Masinga's control, he couldn't make it at 2 o'clock. And thus we had to start at 3 o'clock. But I was informed that we were up to date with that. But apologies anyway for starting late. Mr. Masinga is a former employee of SABC in the capacity of Group Executive Technology. And we'll continue in the vein that we did up to now. Mr. Masinga, please be informed that by law you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily to all questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry. Notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages. You are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath or affirmation before a house or committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside of Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. I have been informed, sir, that you have elected to take the oath, so if you would repeat after me once you put your mic on. I swear by Almighty God.
I swear by Almighty God.
That the evidence I shall give.
The evidence I shall give.
Will be the truth.
Will be the truth.
The whole truth.
The whole truth.
And nothing but the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
Please raise your right hand and say, so help me God.
So help me God.
Thank you very much. Advocate Fanara, over to you. As I indicated, we're going to have to somehow buy a time, but let's hand over to you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Masinga. Can you, for the record, state your particulars and your academic qualification and your relationship with SABC? What capacity did you serve it?
My name is Sipho Masinga. I said I was a group executive of technology at SABC. I hold a B degree, BTEC, in electrical engineering and other management certificates. I was served the SABC for more than 10 years, I think.
Fortunately, we do not have the luxury of time. We need to also catch up for the time that we've lost. There are basically five issues that I would like us to deal with in the next 30 minutes or so. You have made a statement, is that correct?
Yes, true.
And that statement has got 9 pages, is that correct?
That's correct.
Have you signed the statement?
No, I hadn't signed it, but I can sign it.
Okay. But you confirm that the contents of the statement are accurate?
Indeed, true.
Okay. On page 2, I note that the statement isn't marked, doesn't have pages, but I'd like us to go at the bottom of page 2. Statement. You're discussing the meeting you had with Nazim Hawa of TMA Media.
Yes.
If you could just give the committee the details around that meeting and what this TMA Media means.
The TMA Media is a parent company for ANN7 now. Before the launch of the ANN7, there was a meeting to try and bring a contract to take over SABC News and rebrand it. Obviously, the TNA company was going to manage it. SABC was going to supply the staff and the buildings. They were not going to pay any rent. advertising revenue, so I knew it wasn't going to fly from the start.
What happened to that contract? Was it eventually signed?
No, fortunately I chaired that meeting. So as I said, it wasn't going to go any further than that meeting. I sent it back. I sent him to go write a proposal first, indicate what is the value proposition being offered to the SABC, because I couldn't believe the contract was 3 pages.
Let's quickly go through the multi-choice contract.
Okay.
The circumstances surrounding that.
Yes.
You, yourself, and I think the leader of that delegation from the SABC was headed by the then COO, Mr. Mutsoneng, when you met the multi-choice group, is that correct?
Correct.
Can you tell the committee what happened at that meeting?
Well, that meeting came about because I had been, Treasury had rejected the first business case for the news channel for 60 million. In as much as the investment had been made by the SABC from 2006 and obviously failing all along. Then we came here to the portfolio committee in September or so. I raised the issue of the mass carrier agreements from the Electronic Communications Act, right? When that was done, then we had this meeting, presumably to discuss the mass carrier agreement. The then head of television, Verona Duwaka, had estimated that we were going to make about 500 million per year on the mass carrier, on the carriage of the existing three services. So it had nothing to do with the 24-hour channel. It was based on DSTV carrying SABC services, and SABC services are the most watched services on DSTV. We were not getting paid for it. Right. So we went to discuss that, debated with the team at MultiChoice, and we highlighted the points in law, and that we would be ready to proceed to court, because the regulation cannot override an act, right? Then we discussed other matters. When we discussed other matters, I then raised the issue of multi-choice, pronouncing itself on the free-to-air matters, particularly the STP control matters, because they were issuing statements, you know, in newspapers, that they were acting in the best interest of the citizen and so on. So I had an issue with that. So I raised that you know, we do not appreciate it. We argued, and then we wouldn't agree. Eventually, MTS asked Saudi that they have a one-on-one meeting outside the formal meeting. When they met, I'm not sure what was discussed there, right? But when Mutsoneng came back from that meeting, he then was trying to lobby me to ditch the STB control. And that was the beginning of the end of our relationship.
Now, what was government's policy around this set of box?
The government's policy was for encryption. It had been for encryption. SABC did a strategy in 2007. It put encryption in a strategy. Then it went and lobbied government from there. The PDM policy was done in 2008. If I remember correctly. It then made sense, a business case, to secure the future of the SABC once you've gone digital, because you're going to have many players. Right? Then the STB control flew into the policy. It has been that way since then, until 2013. And the SABC had gone to tender, a joint tender with ETV twice, long before I was the CTO there. So I did not see why we would wake up in 2013 after a meeting with MTS. Yeah.
The agreement that was signed, was it consistent with government's policy on encryption, or did it fly against that?
It flew against it. In my view, it was an attempt to manipulate us to defy the government.
At at some point, firstly, before I get to that, you were a group executive reporting directly to the group CEO.
True.
So was the CEO reporting to the group CEO. In a statement on page 4 at the bottom, the last paragraph, you are alluding to attempts by Mr. Mzwane to take over or to have IT reporting to him. Can you just tell the committee the circumstances surrounding that?
Indeed true, he did approach me to try and move, strange enough, the sales division, then Anton Hinn is motivated to move the division to report to Mzwane. I warned the then CEO to say this was improper. Then he approached me to try and do the same and move the technology division to report to him. Obviously, we are disagreeing many times. It wasn't going to work because those executives that report to him, they have no views. So it was my view that if I went to report to Mutuleng, I may as well just resign.
But you are an executive reporting directly to the CEO.
Yes.
Now, where were you going to report? To whom were you going to report to now, having your division brought under the COO?
I was going to report to him according to his proposal. So I was going to shift the division to report to him instead of the CEO, which is a demotion, first and foremost. Secondly, I told him that, as I said in the document, I was a fit and proper person. It will have effectively made him the CTO, and he wasn't qualified to do that. And I did tell him.
So you say this was one of the strategies to take away the powers of the CEO and divest them to the COO?
Indeed it was, because you can do anything. If you take a third of the SAPC to the COO, you already have the other divisions. You don't need a CEO anymore.
The relationship between the COO, in this instance, Mr. Mzwane, and Mr. Mkhobo, you deal with that in page 5 of your statement. I think the beginning, the first five lines or sentences of that. How would you explain that relationship?
It was terrible. I've never seen professional person behave in that fashion. I think Ms. Mkhobo tried to tolerate it and give in, maybe a little bit too much to try and maintain peace. But I wonder that, if you are dealing with a taker, they don't stop. They keep taking. You can give an arm, they want all of you. She would sometimes come to her office, I would feel sorry for her, I would see her, she's crying.
Okay, but you're sharing an instance that happened in one of your meetings. Can you touch on that? That's on paragraph, page 5, on the third paragraph.
Yes, so he had this habit of stopping strategy sessions, particularly, because of anti-intellectualism, obviously. There's professors, you will mock them and make fun of them. You will stop people from presenting. Sometimes you will stop and say, let's go and have a drink. All these childish things when we're trying to run a company. So this time around, he had gone around the provinces to tell staff that they were going to report to him. My staff, they asked me about it. I told them that unless they hear it from me, there was no such thing. Then we went to a strategy session where Ms. Lulam, I think she was presented. I can't remember what the subject was and so on when she spoke. And then he spoke after her. He liked speaking after her so he can have the final word. Yeah. So, then yada yada. But that time, it was so bad because she objected. Right. It really, really was bad. I mean, the CEO couldn't speak after that, even just as a human. The next day, I was presenting. As usual, those who report to the CEO, he would always attack them. So he would never attack me direct. You know, he knew better. And so he would sort of say people, you know, technology, but never mention me, because I just waited for him all the time. Right. So he started. Then I asked him if he was finished. Right. He said no, he's still talking. When he's talking, he doesn't want people to talk. And then I told him no. You see the problem with him? He likes to hear the sound of his own voice. He was too loud. Right. And we argued and so on. And then we took a break. We went outside because I was going to give him an opportunity to address the disrespect he thought I had. So when we were outside, it was just the two of us. I asked Franz to stay away because I wanted to see what he was going to do. Then he said I must respect him. I told him I will never respect him if he doesn't respect me, because what he did the day before was really, 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 really unacceptable. And if it was allowed to continue, because, you know, as I was challenging him, the rest of the people in the room, they were the same ones. Yeah, Sipo, just leave it. And I looked at his people. You know, addressed like children. You know, I said, no, not anymore, not in my presence. And what the rest of my colleagues didn't know, obviously, is that even when he would want to go after the other executives, I would challenge him behind the scenes. Ms. Mokobo and then Zandile Chabalala, they would tell you of many late night meetings that they were intervening in when I was blocking many things Motsoneng was doing.
On page 6, you're discussing some of the successes. That is the third paragraph. At the time, the finances of the corporation were beginning to get healthier. Can you just talk us through that?
Yes, at some point, after Ms. Mokobo's turn, we didn't have a CEO. But we had a bit of money by then. Then we lobbied hard for who's going to be the next CEO. Eventually we got Tian. So the company continued being profitable. So we were in a healthy state because we knew when we go to DTT and we don't have cash reserves, the SAPC will be like the post office because the business model has just changed. Right. So there was money now we could begin to invest aggressively on infrastructure. So for us to begin to do that, SAPC at the time was a construction site. There were projects all over, everywhere. Right. Then I took the time. I had not traveled ever since taking up the role because there was no time to be out of the office. I mean, I was at work most evenings. Then we traveled just to benchmark, to see what we'll do, what we're not going to do, where we are being misled. For instance, some service providers will sell you something that you can buy a lot cheaper, right? So when I came back, I took a break, and then I went to a strategy session in the Free State. That Friday or something, I think I was home. Then we had power failures. Then at the time, also Eskom so happened to have a lot of load shedding, right? Then the systems, the broadcast systems on the TV side only, they went down. About 30 minutes, the teams brought back up. They were doing installation for new equipment, so they thought it was that. Right. I told them to unplug it because it's Friday. We'll deal with all those things on Monday. It happened again on Saturday. Right. And then we had to do an investigation. We discovered that the problem was actually far back in the value chain than we thought. We called Palo World because the SAPC infrastructure is old, but it's still world-class. We don't have internal people to deal with those things. Palo World came, they investigated. Indeed, the boards, they've been fried by the power surges. Now, those things, you don't just buy them off the shelf. They had to be sourced from Germany, custom-made. They don't even fit there. They had to make them fit because the buildings are 40 years old or so. And ship them. So we were on a makeshift. patching, you know, manually problems okay, which we reported in, right? So we thought that once that was stabilized, then Motsuneng and Anton. By the way, while I was away, Dian Olivier was changed to CEO. Right. I came back, Anton Nunes was acting. Now, Anton Nunes was reporting to Motsuneng. I knew then that we were in trouble. Right. Indeed, it happened. Yeah, then we thought that the thing Anton said, yeah, must answer why I should not be suspended. But I asked him, what exactly are you saying I must answer to? You must be specific. What are you saying I did or I didn't do? Right. It wasn't that they had my response. The incident was itself approved by the board. It was reported and captured. It had already been processed and arrested. Right. So now this process, where was it coming from? Because the board shouldn't have approved if we didn't know the infrastructure was old. We knew it. Now these two, they started this process. He asked me to respond why I should not be suspended. He called me to the office with Motsuneng at around 5 p.m. One day, I can't remember when it was. I told them I'm not interested in what they have to say. They don't have any authority. And then I left that meeting. I went to my office. I went to continue working. All right. I could have continued working. But something grave had happened also. As Dian was removed as well, which is what I discovered. There was a preparation of launching this new MOI. Obviously, I was keeping track of SABC governance. So when I discovered that we were running on fumes, the board had no authority, I knew that I need to stop everything and focus on this MOI. Because effectively, we're becoming a department. That's what it does. We're no longer an entity. You become a department. Or an extension of the department, right? I wrote to the board. I called Professor Kumalo then. I told him, Chair, he was chair of the HR committee. You know, if I walk out that door, Exco is going to be walking out that door. He called Saudi, I think, and Anton. He tried to speak to them to say, let's resolve this thing without it getting messy. Right. And I said to the board, all I wanted to know is who was running the corporation. Because, you know, sometimes you see something happen, you pretend it's not what you are looking at. That's what professionals tend to do. In the meantime, you are under attack and you are being taken over, but you pretend that, no, it's a temporary, it will go away. And it doesn't. So I said, no, we need to resolve this issue. I need the board to get back to me. If the board says yes, I will resign. If the board says no, I will fight. The board indeed never authorized, approved that suspension. Hence, I went to court. But you see, now when we went to court, we went to the labor court. We succeeded there. Right? That's why the matter dragged for 2 years. We went to the high court to fight the MOI, not the labor issues, because the labor issues. I said, luckily, I had quite a powerful team. I mean, I had ran SAPC's cases, and I had never lost a case in my life. I don't know why they thought I was going to lose my own case. Right. So we then went to the High Court here in the Western Cape. The matter postponed for long. Right. Advocate Nazir Kasim asked me to postpone it further. Right. There were some things that were required, clarities, alleged documents that were, you know, not there. I knew they were not there. But that's what they do. You know, they create the situation so convoluted. You are stuck searching something that they know is not there, but they bite for time. So I told him, hey, we're wasting time. Go there. If the judge doesn't give us, it's fine. It's part of the plan. Because I want to go to the SCA, or I'm going to ask for a full bench. Because the mistake we made, we did not ask for that when we first filed the papers. And the matter was just too complicated, right? Which is why when France had to go to a high court in Pretoria, the judge had suggested a full bench or a senior judge.
In the interest of time, Chair, no further question.
Thank you very much. Just one from my side. So you paint a very scary picture. From where I'm sitting, it's almost as if the collapse of that department or unit of yours technically could mean the collapse of the SABC, as I understand it, or certainly a major part of it. Who is acting in that position now? Who is serving?
The position was eventually taken to report to Motoleng, so he finally got what he wanted after I left. The person who's acting there is Ralitabo, Teliso Ralitabo. Now, Ralitabo was an acting GM at some point, appointed by Motoleng in Henley, but he didn't cut it as a general manager, right? Because, I mean, it's a technology division. I couldn't have a person who doesn't understand what fiber systems are, for instance. Right. It's a disaster. Otherwise, I end up doing their work.
Okay. No, thanks. Just so that we understand it.
If I may, Chair, sorry.
You'll do that in a minute.
Okay.
Just ask the question, and you can put two of them together because you're buying time. This absorption of your unit into the COO's unit, was that as a result of the amended MOI? Or was it made possible because of the amendment of the MOI?
Yes, absolutely. Because you no longer need board approval to do anything.
You may add something else, then you're going to start with you, Ms. Killian, ready yourself?
Yeah. No, no, I was just saying it's odd that the CTO they had now, you know, only as a metric. Hmm? Yeah.
All right. Ms. Killian, your 5 minutes starts now.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Masinga. Thanks for having clarified how it happened, because according to the latest annual report, that person is now reporting to the COO. Can you please just take us through, because we have copies of two memorandums of incorporation. The one is dated, signed on the 30th of October 2014, and the other one is unsigned, but is supposedly dated somewhere in 2016. But it now appears that there's another one. And what you're painting here gives one a very, very bad picture of collusion to effectively move a document which was rejected by CIPRO and then reintroduced but backdated. Now, that amounts to in anybody's language. Could you please just take us through that we understand what your personal experience has been in the MOI conversion or concoction? Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, this MOI, you know, that's why it costed me a million to fight this matter, because I realized this was really a heist, how to take over an entity. If you were not going to achieve amending the Broadcasting Act, because of the onerous process of amending a law, then you go, you amend the MOI, but you make the MOI an act, basically, because if it overrides certain sections of the act, the act is redundant, right? So there was an MOI done in from 2012 to 2013. I think you were still in the portfolio committee, if I remember. Honorable Killian. That was done by former Minister Dana Pule. She never got to finish it. Right? She left. That I know for sure. Because I remember the first meeting in which I was present when Minister Yunus Karim had raised concerns with the MOI. And he wasn't that convinced about it. And I was there in those meetings with the board. That's why I know the history. So, somehow it happened that document was filed with CIPRO. This is a 2013 now document, right? We didn't see that former Minister Dana Pule's signature on the document, first and foremost, right? We asked for a general meeting resolution for that document. It wasn't there, right? CIPRO rejected that document nonetheless. It was done by Ngubane and Associates. somewhere in Sentin, from the recorder that we saw. I'm not sure on whose authority. It looks like it went back to wherever it came. I don't know they did what. They filed it back to CIPRO. All without the board of the SAPC knowing. Now, when you talk about SAPC, it's not the executive, it's not management. The SAPC is the board. That's what the PFME says. The board then delegates the running and management of the entity to everybody else. Right. So it was refiled, and then the refiled version was approved in 2014 March or so. Right. I remember this because even when Ms. Zandile Tshabalala wanted to act as a CEO, she couldn't because that MOI hadn't been effective. It was rejected at CIPRO. Right. I did submit, I think, the minutes to the committee. With that, so a letter was sent in March 2014 to say the resubmitted version was accepted. Now, it spoke only to the board and the removal of the board. This I know because at the time there was an aim of dealing with Ms. Kawi Mahlatsi, which didn't succeed, right? But it was written for that. There was no executive inclusion there amending the authority of disciplining executives. So when I challenged Anton and Motoneng that they didn't have authority, right? Typically they would call security and so on and march people out of the building. But they knew they couldn't do that because I was right, they did not have authority. Right? Then it was silent for about 3 weeks or a month or so. Nothing was happening. Obviously the board was also trying to intervene. About a month or two later, then it emerged there was another amended document of 2014. It was now signed in September. By now it's October or November or something like that, when everyone learns of this new document. Then they tried, the company secretary and Motoneng, they tried to get the delegation.
Sorry, Mr. Singh, just hold on for a minute. I knew it would come to this point. This is such an important matter, but the 5 minutes are up. Now, I'm not sure if other members are going to forfeit their 5 minutes for this matter, or do you want to go through yours and try and find time for this thing? I don't know how you want to handle it, members, but this goes to the crux.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Then this new MOI now, the second version now of 2014. The 2013 version of Mr. Napole has no signature, has no general meeting resolution. So we are still grappling with that. Now you have a 2014 done on the powers of the 2013 document. So you see convoluting processes and creating arguments of fact, right? Now obviously it wasn't filed if it was done in 2014 by the time I was suspended. It's impossible. Now an MOI is not effective unless it's filed and accepted by CIPRO. But I was suspended on this document. Right. And this is why the board fought, because I said, no, this is a test of power. Motoneng has been given this document now. He needs to introduce it. He chose a person significant enough to send the shivers to the rest of the executives. Right. When he did that, all the other executives knew they were finished. Because there is no way he will have prevailed without that document. The board tried, they fought it, they themselves were removed. The rest was a mess. I mean, yeah, I think you've come to know what transpired here.
Honorable
Chauke? Well, thank you very much, Chair. Obviously, my follow-up question to that input. What was the role of the chairperson of the board here, Prof. Highlights, Prof. Magube, throughout? Can you maybe elaborate? But I want to take you to page 4 of your document. I know it's not numbered. The page 4, there's a paragraph there that deals with the government policy, and in that you, in fact, speak more of a government policy and you cite the ANC in the process. I want you just to go just a little bit detailed on that part of the... It's an open thing, but I want you just to go detailed. The last one for me, Chair, the site, is this TNA,
company. Is that the Gupta related company? If so, do you have a copy of that three-pager, a proposal that they were bringing forward for control of the news, a channel?
In the MOI documents, Professor Magube was still acting then, so it is not easy to say, because without board resolution, the chairpersons would have had no role. Whatever they would have done, it's of no consequence, and it's an entity, because without the nine-member resolution, right. So it's not clear. Maybe they were in those meetings that were facilitating behind, you know, the scenes and the submission. I do not know. But there is no official role that he had played, and he was still acting chairperson at the time. And the policy role, that was capturing a discussion that we had, right? It's just sort of saying, this is what was said, this is what I said, if you know what I mean. So I was painting the process of lobbying for positions to say, you can't just wake up and say, hey, I'm changing encryption. The SABC, when they then lobbied, they had to lobby various forums and place it, you know, on various policy documents before it actually made it to the PDM policy. Right. If you want to wake up in 1 year and just say, I'm changing a policy, it's not realistic. So I was giving him the history of what had happened regarding the encryption position, how it came about, right? So a recount of step, that this is what was done, this is what was done, this is what was done by those who had came before us, right?
That's an important point. Not doing that specific, and the response, what was the response? Because I have an interest on this point that says these people are useless. Don't tell me. Because you see, he has been in the forefront of all of this. Now comes the point here that he now says that, in fact, these ANC people are useless. That's why I was pushing you to speak to us on this point, so that we understand the kind of a person he is.
Oh, no, that's what I did the report. I did the report because I was content. You see, the tone of it did say to me that we are challenging everyone else, the right. So, and then when I raised this point, he did say to me, Sipo, don't tell me about those people, they're useless. All they are good for is releasing statements. Which is why I said to him, we can no longer work together, his part, because I could see that now we are entering a different terrain. It's a recount of the conversation that we had had. In fact, you know how I try not to draw problems closer. So I had met him that day for the first time, and I wasn't going to meet him again. I knew I didn't want a copy of the contract or anything. I just wanted that meeting to be over, because I knew the headaches, you know, that were going to come with the engagement. If it goes on any longer, if I open that door, we're going to have serious headaches. So I just sent him back. We're not going to keep copy. We tried to ask us to sign the register. I told no one is signing any register of who's present in this, because we didn't have a meeting.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Honorable Panda.
Thanks, Chair. Mr. Masinga, I mean, I read your written submission as well as just heard what you said. And the picture you paint of Cloudy Motsuneng is a sexist man, he's arrogant, bully, he covers other people's positions, all of it. When he was bragging about himself, did he ever mention whether or not he had political protection and where that protection came from?
No, I think maybe with others. He knew I'm socially aware, so that is why we're the friend of me. We're managing each other.
Oh. But what was the talk in the corridors? I mean, what did people say? Because, I mean, we've had very smart like yourself who have come here. And maybe you're the only one who kind of stood up to Mr. Ning. But everybody else was bullied. What did people say in the corridors about that?
Yeah, no, they would raise those things. But it was, I wouldn't pay attention because, you know, I was a very direct person.
What are those things they said about him?
No, the, no, I didn't recollect the, you know, the side shows. But he would just be telling people if they can't work with him, you know, they must leave. You know, some of us have a vision. It was just
What I'm trying to get at, did he ever brag about having political protection? Maybe not to you, but to your colleagues and anybody else at the SABC.
No, not in my...
Looking at his record, you know, he bragged a lot. This is what you're saying too in your document, that he bragged a lot about stuff Mrs. Makobo did, that you did.
Yeah.
So he himself actually wasn't that talented at the SABC. So what was the thing, what was gassing him? What gave him that power?
Not to me directly. I can tell you a bit difficult meeting we had with Treasury when they objected to launching of the 24-hour news channel. A very difficult meeting. I felt very sorry for former Minister Yunis Karim, that meeting. He was sitting there. Chairperson was sitting there. Treasury was there. CEO was here. They were not talking to each other. We had to break. I had to go chair the meeting with Treasury. Avril, I forgot the surname. Kept on raising PFMA and point issues. I was exhausted by then. I mean, I had been managing these things for some time. Said to Avril, Avril, no power. When you recognize real power, you must stop telling me about those sections and those lines so we can move on. So you see, you know, he doesn't care about ministers because the minister didn't want the channel to progress as it was. So he said, you know, I instruct ministers. That's all, really, I would have heard him say.
Okay, I want to drill down into that meeting with Nazim Hawa from the New Age. It's called Spade a Spade, a representative of the Guptas. He wanted to, he had the goal to bring a document to the SABC saying an outside organization wants to take over the public broadcaster's news division and... What have you done with your technology?
What have you done with your technology?
Thank you.
is not working.
Oh, yes, it is working. Sorry, I'll just... Nazim Hawa comes to the SABC. He has a two-page contract. He says his company, a company owned by the Guptas, would like to take over the SABC's news division and produce news for the public broadcast, take over a national key point. Can you tell us a little bit more about what his proposal was, or did you just shut off that meeting before you even spoke any further?
It was a surprise meeting. I think we had a power failure that day, and the way it was designed, the SABC prioritizes broadcast if there's a major power failure. So office systems don't work. So you use the lifts and the goods lifts. So I met him in the lift, so he understands. You know, he was walking up to the 27th floor. At the time, I didn't know we were at the meeting because I was managing another crisis, you know. And then later I get a call to say we must come for a meeting in the 27th floor, right? So when we get there, because typically I try to be dynamic, informal, you know, so I will agree on short notice. So we go there, then I meet him there. I'm not sure what it's about. Then Saudi excuses himself from the meeting. Then I must now chair, you know, and take over. Then the document, I'm giving this three-page document. Obviously, you know, I scan through it, what it's about, so we can have a meeting. I look at it, it's talking about the rebranding SABC News. The SABC will provide resources. TNA will not pay any rental, or SABC will provide journalists. TNA will retain advertising revenue. Just, you know, there, it's enough for me to understand the context of our meeting or the aim of the meeting, right? So when I look at the three-page document, now even if I wrote the document, the same document to launch the news channel itself, I think it was 60 pages or something, I can't remember. Now we are talking about a takeover, the function of a national broadcaster with three pages. Just that itself was enough for me, you know, to send him back. But, you know, I had to be nice and find a cunning way to say, you know, just go and make it more appealing. And so we sent it back,
Do you know whether this happened before ANN7 was launched? And then, my time's running out, so I'm going to ask you three questions. Do you know whether that happened before before ANN7 was launched? Do you know of any other attempts by the Guptas or any of the organizations to try do further business with the SABC or take over any other functions of the SABC?
It was certainly before ANN7 was launched. I think soon after it had that the construction had began in Midrand for the other studio. Which was obviously done a bit in the rush, as the launch showed. So I figured that because the other one was not successful, then they proceeded. No, the others, I wasn't sure really if there was any. Certain broadcasts like the morning things, there were operational things I wouldn't get involved in. I would be involved with those that cut across the infrastructure, so those that required support and so on.
Right, thank you very much, sir.
Madam Lewis. Thanks, Chair. Mr. Masinga, I'm on page 7 of your document. The last paragraph there. That paragraph alludes to the fact that in 2013 there was an attempt to amend the MOI. And then again in 2014 it happened and Cyprus this time endorsed it. Can you bridge the gap between those two? Because it was Cyprus who rejected it in 2013, who submitted it in 2013. And why was it then accepted when submitted by the minister? Because we view it as something which is fraudulent.
Yeah, okay. The document of 2013 and the one accepted in 2014 by Cyprus is the same alleged document of Mr. Inapule. Right. They tried to file it the first time. It was rejected. Right. Purportedly, it was sent by her direct. So she wrote a letter informing a board of an intention to amend the articles. That is all that is on record. And we do have that letter. It's part of the case, the court file. So that letter was used as a notice or as a resolution by mere fact that she notified the board of her intention to amend. So that was the last communication, and then she was removed soon after. Right. How then the document reached CIPRO? Who filed it? You know, things you sign, you incur expenditure. Which organization? Who was instructing it? It lists on the submission document, I think it's Gubane & Co, as I say. Who was instructing them? On what authority? Right. So that is when the issue arises. So it was filed to CIPRO, don't know by whom, on which board resolution, right? CIPRO rejected, right? It comes back, right? Assuming whatever was wrong was fixed, I don't know by whom again, because see, that question arises. And then it is resubmitted again. No one knows with any major changes or not. Again, not clear with whose authority. CIPRO responds to say it has accepted. So, you know, it's like a bank writing and say you've won or you have a deposit of money, but you don't.
Mr. Mapping, I'll go to page 9 again. top paragraph there, you are
thanks, Chair. Mr. Masinga, let's go to page 9, the top paragraph, where you are reflecting on the do's and don'ts by the chairperson. Can you rehash what you are saying there? Because I think it is critical for the work that we are doing, that he has no powers to do some certain things, as you have captured there. That he is not allowed to submit anything on behalf of the board. Are you standing by what you are saying there?
No, indeed true. Without a correct board resolution, the chairperson has no say. You must be mandated by board. Even if you're going to issue a press statement, the board must mandate you to go and address the public. So if I'm sure people are sent the request to be interviewed. I doubt me myself won't be available until the non-member resolution is available requesting such. Otherwise, it's a non-entity.
You were able to protect the wickets at SABC until you went to a trip where on your return you found that certain things have been done incorrectly. Is that not implying that there were no systems in place? Because if systems are in place, with or without your presence, nothing can tamper with the systems. What actually went wrong when you left?
It's true. The breakdown of internal control systems occurred a long time ago. It was really pure, what do you call it, grit and guts that was sort of keeping us from limping from crisis to crisis. So unless somebody speaks up, like there was a period when we didn't have a CEO, obviously because other people had preference for themselves for the role, for about 2 weeks or so, I think after Ms. Lulama. So imagine you don't have a CEO, you can't have anything signed. Right? When I stood up again and took it up to the board to say we must have a CEO and we need a CEO now, there was a fight about it, but I knew they were lobbying, and some people, when they look for an acting person, they don't look for a strong person. They look for the weak person. They even discuss these things in their meetings, right? So obviously we couldn't sit back. Some people prefer to sit back. And then I think GTN eventually got, and the balance was maintained. That was why things were okay until about after September, when the wheels really began coming off.
The last one for me is a request. Can you provide us with the original copy of the MOI and also sign your statement before you leave where you are seated? Because I think that is critical for us.
I will. I did provide the
original MOI.
Yeah, I provided the articles to show the procedure and the documents that you must have as evidence that you have amended the MOI. So before you get to the MOI, the process to amend the articles is contained in the articles, right? So those documents that are in the 2011 amendments, all they needed to do was show us the existence of them, and it will have been the end of it. But of course, we know they don't exist.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khoza.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much to you, sir. If you can go to page 6 for me. I just want you to clarify the statement on paragraph 3, where you say, when I returned there, had been a new acting CEO who was monitoring the report, I knew that being away had provided a window of opportunity, a new world that I could never personally trust the individual. Who is this individual? And who is this CEO, the new acting CEO that you are talking about here, sir?
The acting CEO who kept the ship afloat after Ms. Mohobo was Dianne Olivier. Dianne was the acting CFO. So it was purely based on the financial perspective to keep the organization going until a decision is made, right? But the money kept on coming, and I warned him that I was increasingly getting concerned with the profits we're posting, seeing that Motsoeneng, was more and more going public now to say the company is sustaining, you know, is the engine of the company. I said we're going to have a problem here, right? And it's fine, he didn't listen, and so on and so on. Then I left on tour with a trip with my team of engineers, right? We were invited to Singapore and so on to meet our counterparts that side, who were also doing construction. When I came back, Anton Yenis, who was the head of sales, I'm sure you'll have seen him on some TV briefings with Motsoeneng, was the then acting CEO, right? This is now Anton who took his motivation to Ms. Mohobo to request that sales must go report to Motsoeneng himself. Right. So I knew that there's going to be a problem. But I just couldn't establish the source of what was about to happen.
Okay. I just want to draw you on page 4, sir. If you can go to that one again. The third paragraph there. You are where you say on another day, sometime later. There is a statement that you are making in that paragraph. In fact, I'm not going to be reading that. You know that statement very well, especially where you say, I also narrated to him how this had filtered into the government policy, having been informed by policy positions of the ANC. He resorted then, I must not tell him about the ANC. Those people were useless. All they were good at was releasing statements which meant nothing. Now, what I want to find out from you, sir, is that probably you will agree with me. This thing is back, Chair. Probably you will agree with me that clearly if Mr. Motsoeneng was educated, we would say he's Michael Nicofelli. Nicole Machiavelli, okay? But in this case, we wanted to know who are these individuals that are behind him, those individuals with authority, because clearly he is not getting his mandate from the ANC, nor is he getting his mandate from the policies of government. So in other words, there is no institutional there is no institution where he derives or a respectable system where he derives his mandate from. Obviously, he's deriving it from somewhere. And where is that? And I'm hoping that you will be brave enough and actually tell us.
Hello,
that is that. Look, he wanted no encryption policy, right, against, obviously, the policy, long-standing policy. He got the policy, right. He wanted the new MOI. He got the new MOI. So I think we can deduce from there.
Now, this is my last question. I want to know, when all of you as executives are leaving, who replaces you? And what informs that replacement? I know it may be an unfair question to you, because maybe you are not necessarily there, but it's important to ask, when you are losing this kind of skill, this level of skill that we have seen repeatedly, and we are now concerned about who is replacing you. Are you aware of what is happening currently?
Yes, I am. That's why certain things that happen in certain meetings, we know. It doesn't help. You know, there was a fellow who was an advisor to the minister when they were dealing with my case. And this advisor then eventually ended up a chairperson somewhere else. It demotivates people to fight, So that those things are why some people, they don't fight, even though they're in meetings and people are discussing who must act. But we don't want this one. This one is too strong. Right now...
Because you said the individual concerned, Mr. Matsuneng, is anti-intellectualism.
Yeah.
I'm very concerned because I consider myself as one of those. Now, if you are saying he's anti-intellectualism, obviously, if he pushes you out, he obviously replaces you with people who are like him.
True. He said it publicly, I mean, many times about education, educated people, certifications. It's no secret.
Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Mr. Masinga. And we just want to commend you for your taking a stand on the MOI and at great personal expense taking that litigation to court. I think the whole issue is captured on page 8, where you say in the second last paragraph before in conclusion, it is not necessary to point out the results of the said MOI document, which has become the root cause of everything the committee will be inquiring upon. Would you further comment on the statement that you made that the board, if I understood you correctly, following the MOI, the board has no governance and has become an extension of the department? And you said you phoned Professor Kumalo about your concerns about that. Is that a correct reflection of how you see things as we are considering the role of the board? In other words, you are saying the board can play no effective role.
If that MOI stands, it contains a section, for instance, which says the minister may approve any matter on round robin. That literally means that the chairperson can want something and send it to the minister. She signs it off. Done. Why do you need the 12-member board? You don't need them anymore. So it's systematically written in finer details. There's many sections there that effectively what it does, it makes the Broadcasting Act redundant. That is the net effect that I can just summarize it. Yeah.
And I'm sure we all cannot agree with that, and that situation cannot be allowed to continue. Just to then comment a bit on your involvement and your discussions with MultiChoice. What was your reaction to that when you heard of the final, I use the word sale, maybe it's not sale, but of the archive equipment, of the archive documents that led to that quite substantial bonus being paid to Mr. Matsuneng? Was that something that surprised you following the discussions with MultiChoice, which you seem to indicate from your statement that you were very opposed to those discussions, or was it a different discussion that you were involved with?
No, it was the very same one. The initial contract, that was for 60 million, just for the news channel. In my view, that was fine, as I'd say it, right? Because it was for a single channel, deals with a specific service. And it's a new channel, they will broadcast it, SABC will get to incubate it. So it was a mutually beneficial. But I'll tell you, honestly, something happened when the old board dissolved. I mean, my view, personal view, Motsuneng was scared of Ngubane to an extent, or respected him, right? When then chairperson Zandile Shabalala, former chairperson, came, his attitude changed significantly. He became a little bit more brazen, sort of. That was the first thing I noticed. That is why I would also talk to the chairperson, say, you know, there's a change of the manner of attitude is not the same. This is when the change of policy first began. There was no mention of such things when Ngubane was there, I can assure you. It was only when the new board chaired by the former chairperson died and things were stopping things every day.
And you make mention of a discussion that the CEO of MultiChoice came to the SABC and had a discussion with the COO without the SABC CEO knowing about it at all.
Yes, no, that
sounds very strange to me.
They met a few times, even when the STB control policy, they would come together, the two. I didn't personally like MTS because he exhibited a bit of superiority complex, which undermines my intellect, of course. I think I'm psychologically very advanced, astute. So I wouldn't sit in a meeting with him because, you know, the man, like if you saw how he responded to, I think, Verona, you know, he'll sit there and tell you, you know, produce all the rubbish. He had that thing, which I said to Motoneng right then there, don't invite me to a meeting with this man. Otherwise, because I know anything that happens there is not recorded because those meetings are not legal. Right. So we never met again since, but they now had a common enemy because we wanted to make the SAPC about 2 billion, 2.5 billion in 5 years, right? Which was what legally is due to us. Well, it was due to us then when I was there for the mastery, right? He goes, he negotiates a contract that pays 500 million over 5 years, and you get a bonus. I don't know. I don't understand it.
Yeah, thank you. We're just trying to understand. It's my time. Finished. Thank you. Sorry, Chair. Last Chair. So nothing has come of your attempts to negotiate that MultiChoice should pay SABC for the carrying of SABC programs. That seems to be what you and that would make sense to me as well.
Indeed. After the meeting we had, the second version of the contract, from the 60 million now to the 100 million, contained now the terms that came from that meeting to try and cover everything in one contract at only 100 million. This is when we significantly differed, because in my view, this was really a sale of a national asset, right? I can't be educated and uneducated at the same time. I'm not sure what I was being asked to be. Right, but I can see the figures. I can see that this year we are killing this company. You will not see it while analog broadcasts, because simply the only reason why the SABC is still on air is because you can't add more competitors terrestrially. There is no spectrum. That is the only reason. If tomorrow you woke up and you added two more competitors, the SABC will be where the post office is. So I knew that we are sort of protected by the physical constraint of the available resources. But when you go to digital, you're going to have new players, right? Some of them whom are the partners, they are all launching channels. So now what was protecting you is removed. Remember what happened to Telkom when the monopoly was removed. But when do we learn? Why do we keep going through the same circle over and over?
Yeah, thank you, sir. Did I hear you well when you said the then chair also attempted to becoming the CEO? Shabala.
Yeah, she called the group to say she's asked to act as a CEO. I'm not sure as by whom. But we were fine with Shabala, so I went to her and I advised her how previously there was a board member who had an interest in a position. That interest nearly led to a breakdown of the board.
Yeah. No, could you perhaps just briefly, the member was saying that he commended you for your boldness. Well, just that he came too early, I would have said, well, we can't clap hands for the fish when it swims, because that's what it's supposed to be doing in the first place. But anyway, why are the other senior managers afraid of Mr. Swinning in SABC? What is this thing that they fear this much?
I don't know. Maybe it's different personalities, to be quite honest. I don't really know myself. Well, he talks a lot of threats, obviously, always warning people. Language. I guess people then they see what happens to those who challenge him. Maybe they then become subdued and so on.
Who appointed Aguma? And who is this person?
Aguma was appointed by Motoneng around January 2013. personally, directly. I mean, I'm not sure where he got him. We'd heard he was with the AG, but he wasn't on our account at the SABC. I remember because when Akuma came, Mutuneng had just been removed by the then board just before it dissolved. So he wasn't in the office. So we had to receive him. Right. You know, get the CEO to sort of hide the embarrassment. Okay, that there was a person coming to start, and the signature was removed, right? But before you know it, then he became acting CFO. I think I did oppose that because, in my knowledge, he did not have experience of becoming a CFO. He had been an auditor. I had not known him to have run as much as the finance department. Now, those are two different things, auditing and being a CFO, right? From there, then CEO, acting CEO. That's why I never addressed him on any of our documents, because I consider him junior, to be quite honest.
What is the current status now on the complicated matter of inscription and the nano? I mean, is it that's a matter that's at court as we speak?
Yes, it's going to the Constitutional Court, I think.
Okay, yeah. The question, there's something that I didn't hear you responding to. Do you know anything about the archives of SABC that landed in MultiChoice?
That was part of the contract that we were fighting about. It was those additional clauses that were introduced after the interim board came. So it became a contract talking about everything, archives, you know, mastery, new channels. So we were not sure what we were dealing with. So it was the whole of the SABC now. So that's why we couldn't agree, and then I refused to participate, of course, in the process.
The relationship between the COO and the rest, obviously, the rest, I would say, they've all been ejected, as you have said, and one would assume, as you have said, that the current people are actually the yes bosses at the SABC, including the board members.
Indeed, everyone else, I mean, so many settlements have been issued. I think half the EXCO, not half, in fact, maybe 80% or 70% of EXCO is gone. Like I said, that I knew when I left, EXCO is finished. And I didn't swallow my words. There's only maybe four people who don't fight much, who typically do what they're told. Which is fine for them. Even those that were close, your Verona Duaka, your Jimmy Matthews, who were sometimes, I would fight with them not knowing I was fighting for them. When that shell was removed, they soon discovered it was hard to breathe.
Chair, I think that's where I end.
Yeah. Thank you kindly. And Honorable Mkwena?
Sure. Thanks, Chair. I just need to confirm this. So you're saying that Claudio Motsoeneng and possibly his cabal, the people that he drinks with, the powers that be that maintain his lifestyle and pay him, think that the ruling party is useless and toothless to the point that they just write statements. Is that what he said to you?
It is a true account of our conversation, and that is why I was so incensed. That's why, you know, I counted it, because it's significant to the breakdown of our relationship. You know, it's a significant factor when I knew that I think he had, you know, he had lost it, according to me.
Yeah.
And I was not... At some point, he said I had a long-term view, as written here. I said, of course, what I'm going to be doing with myself for the next however many years.
So, and it's also your firm view that the Minister of Communications signed off on a document that was illegally constituted. And that document was then approved by the DTI.
What we, you know, when we went to court, we tried to pull SABC file from CIPRO. First, I think we're told there was an instruction that there must be approval from a director to pull an entity file. We pressed on, we used other lawyers because I was really ready for a fight. Right. Then we had that file disappeared. I don't know. But we never got the SABC file. That is what we informed, that the file disappeared. I paid people to go through that file. Because what I needed was the evidence, like the 2011 document. That's all we needed. That this resolution from an AGM is there, signed by all the board members, as usual. There are, you know, the minister has signed the documents, Minister Danapule. Until today, I've never seen former Minister Danapule's signature on her own alleged document, let alone the board resolution.
Okay. And then, do you have anything, piece of paper, anything, that is evidence to the effect that Mr. Motsoeneng and Mr. Nazeem Hoa were in the process of attempting to sell a portion of a national key point?
I don't think, you know, the obvious things run. You are called on the phone and we discuss on the corridor. There isn't anything written. If I remember, the first thing that was going to be signed was a register, which I think the head of legal was there then, Mbulu, if I remember, to sign the register to say who was in the meeting. In my view, this was to then identify stumbling blocks. That's why I said there will be no register today, because this meeting did not happen, you know, until that document comes. That's why I didn't take this contract, because there were going to be follow-ups.
Yeah.
There was going to be a communication channel, right, and I wanted it dead then and there, and without a possibility of another, because if another person had chaired that meeting, if I was deemed the problem, they would have met me at ESCO, right, or the board committee. And I will have shot it down there, because I will have made sure we took a resolution to say this thing didn't happen, so we didn't consider it. So you can't therefore come back with it.
Last question. This Mr. Raditabo, who succeeded you,
yes.
Is he from the Free State?
Yes, he's from the Free State.
Thank you very much.
I'm laughing because you did it in your time. For no other reason, I'm just laughing that you did it in 5 minutes. Mr. Masinga, thank you so much for making time. I do think that it was very useful information. As we said, is there anybody from the SABC here to answer questions on behalf? Not anybody. Board members of the SABC. None? All right. Mr. Masinga, thank you very much, sir. As we indicate to every other member, our process is run until the 28th of February. If between now and the 28th of February there's something that comes to mind and you think it would be useful for our own mandate to strengthen our report, please feel free to call us. Once that information arrives at my office, we will share it with the committee and therefore with South Africans. So please, it's not the end of the road. You could give us as much information, if indeed there is more information that you want to share with us. Outside of that, sir, geniet die Kersfees en 'n voorspoedige nuwe jaar. No. I was, you were intellectual. That's why you said that. Happy Christmas and prosperous New Year. There's tea outside. I know our next guests have arrived. Sorry, we're just running a bit late. But everybody, there's tea outside. Can we have tea in 5 minutes and come back?
Thank you. What do you do now, Mr.? It's quite sad. Brilliant man, brilliant mind, working for a state entity.
Yeah.
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 running late, and let us apologize to the next two. We are running late. Let us apologize to all our guests that will follow. Apologies that we've held you up, and I hope you forgive us. It doesn't happen all the time, but technology is playing up and those type of things, so please accept our apology. Our program, as you have it, honorable members, indicated that we are going to see what we call, in inverted commas, the SABC 8. And we did indicate that four, they had agreed amongst themselves that only four would represent all eight of them. And the way that we will do it is that we will split it into two sessions. So we'll have Ms. Krivani Pillay and Ms. Tandeka Kulube for the first hour or so, 2 hours. And thereafter, we'll have a short break, and then we will have Mr. Huyo Boko and Mr. Kalata for the next 2 hours. So that's how we're going to handle it. We're not going to see all of them together, and they will engage in that fashion. They will decide, or they will share amongst each other how they're going to share presentations and or questions, unless you're going to ask specific questions to specific individuals, but we'd leave that up to them. We also agreed, honorable members, that we will allow them to read statements like we did with one of the colleagues. There won't be any lead, and then we'll take it from there. They don't expect too much time. They have prepared, and they've kindly agreed that they will make their presentations, and immediately after their presentations, we will get into engagements. And Mr. Chauke, you'll be the first. I think you haven't had a turn to be first today, have you?
No.
You haven't? Okay, so we'll start this side and go around. And then with the next round, it will be with you, Mr. McQuenna, with the next group. So you prepare yourself. There's going to be no lead time. Can we start with you, Ms. Pillay? Please be informed that by law you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you, or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry. Notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages, you are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath or affirmation before a house or a committee may not be used against you in any court or outside Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. I have been advised, Ms. Pillay, that you have chosen to do the affirmation. If you could repeat after me, with your mic on. I solemnly and sincerely declare.
I solemnly and sincerely declare.
And affirm.
And affirm.
That the evidence I shall give.
That the evidence I shall give.
Will be the truth.
Will be the truth.
The whole truth.
The whole truth.
And nothing but the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
So, I so affirm. If you could repeat those words.
I so affirm.
Thank you very much. And if you could move over to you, Ms. Kulube. Am I pronouncing it?
Kubule.
Kubule, I beg your pardon. I beg your pardon. Please be informed that by law you are required to answer fully and satisfactorily all the questions lawfully put to you or to produce any document that you are required to produce in connection with the subject matter of the inquiry, notwithstanding the fact that the answer or the document could incriminate you or expose you to criminal or civil proceedings or damages. You are, however, protected in that evidence given under oath or affirmation before a house or a committee may not be used against you in any court or place outside of Parliament, except in criminal proceedings concerning a charge of perjury or a charge relating to the evidence or documents required in these proceedings. Ma'am, I have been advised that you will take the oath, is that correct?
I will take the oath.
If you could repeat after me. I swear by Almighty God. Ma'am?
I swear by Almighty God.
That the evidence I shall give.
That the evidence I shall give.
Will be the truth.
Will be the truth.
The whole truth.
The whole truth.
And nothing but the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
Please raise your right hand and say, so help me God.
So help me God.
Thank you very much. Having dispensed of that, Ms. Pillay, I am informed that you will start, so we will give you 20 minutes, and is that how you're going to start, is it? And as we reach the 20 minutes, we will ask you to wrap up, then we will ask your colleague, and the same thing, and then we'll open it up to members. So members will take notes for the first 40 minutes or so. Is that okay? It doesn't matter who starts. Are you going to say, no, it doesn't matter?
So we decided that I would start so that we could set the context for our cause and the evidence that we would need before you here this evening. Good evening, Hlalinga Phambili, and members of the Ad Hoc Committee. My name is Thandeka Gubule Mbeki. I'm the economics editor responsible for economics, business and financial news across television, radio and other platforms of the SABC. I have worked for the SABC in various capacities, on and off, over the years. I was a lecturer of journalism, so I'm a teacher, and having lectured at both Rhodes University in Grahamstown and at Monash University, South Africa, I hold a master's degree in journalism from the Columbia School of Journalism, New York. I feel this is necessary to explain this because herein lies some of the reasons for my decision to stand up and say no to the reign of terror in the newsroom wrought on us by Mr. Motsoeneng and his cohorts. The reason I see it fit for me to immediately give you my background as a lecturer is because I have taught and insisted on journalism ethics to my students, some of whom report to me in the newsroom in my current job. And now we are increasingly required to subvert these very ethics of the profession in our daily operations, which contradict what I have always stood for and compromises me as a professional and in the eyes of our communities, our parents, the South African public, and all and sundry. I'm expected to act in line with the principles of journalism that I have sworn to and that I have instilled in others. At the SABC, we have borne painful witness to the death of public service journalism. Journalism is central to a democracy. Public service journalism is dying at the SABC. Every day, we, its journalists and editors, bear witness to a mandate betrayed. I was party in the early 90s to the drafting of the mandate. Discussions were held at the SABC under Zwelakhe Sisulu and under Christo Kritzinger in those days, and we discussed this very mandate. Some of us are not just professionally attached to this mandate or ethically bound to it, we are emotionally attached to it. Journalism is crucial to education, health, commerce, and the advancement of society in general. This is the consensus of our Constitution, the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, with its breathtaking and sweeping jurisprudence. Our only legal and moral philosophical consensus as a country and as a people. As journalists practicing in the broadcasting space, we subscribe to the code of conduct and ethics and the conduct laid down and out by the Broadcasting Complaints Commission of South Africa, the BCCSA, which holds, among others, that broadcasting service licenses must report news truthfully, accurately, and fairly. It also says news must be presented in the correct context and in a fair manner, without intentional or negligent departure from the facts, whether by distortion, exaggeration, or misrepresentation, material omission, or summarization, or mischievous summarization, as we will show. For us to fulfill our public service mandate, we need a free press. This freedom, borrowing from the Bill of Rights, provides for independent scrutiny of the forces that shape society and is essential to realizing the promise of a democracy. It enables citizens to make informed judgments on the issues of the day. And for example, on the day that I so pleaded with the head of news to allow our journalists who were actually shouting at me in the newsroom to do their jobs as the capital city was burning, people needed to know whether to send their kids to school that day. They needed to know which routes to take into the city. They needed to know where they could fetch water in the context. So we were not allowed to cover this as we should as journalists and provide the public service. Journalism enables citizens to make informed judgments on issues of the day, a role whose centrality is recognized by the South African Constitution. This is why many of us who understand these fundamentals were shocked at the 2013 announcement by the then COO, Mr. Hlaudi Motsoeneng, that from then onwards, the SABC would cover 70% so-called positive news. I've never been able to find out what that quite is. And 30% negative news. Any trained journalist would immediately find this odd, as news stories in any newsroom should be decided upon news values, newsworthiness being the highest among them, and nothing else. This is one of the illogical pronouncements and experiences that our editorial staff have had to contend with. We have already heard some accounts from this one of our best journalists who is on the coalface of these experiences, and that will be my colleagues here who will narrate to you their very harrowing experiences in the newsrooms of the South African Broadcasting Corporation. In this presentation, my colleagues will further demonstrate this dire state of affairs by first outlining the context within which these things are allowed to happen and are happening, the factors that make our newsrooms vulnerable to interference and political manipulation, the consequences of dissent in our newsroom, which we all know so well. You cannot imagine, honorable members, what we have been through just to sit here with you. To make it alive to this point has been a trial of the nerves. But here we are, by God's grace, talking to you about what has happened in that newsroom. An independent media, ladies and gentlemen, is not a luxury. It is not an extra that can be dispensed with when the executive arm of the state wills it. It is at the absolute core of equitable development. It is in the spirit that the South African Broadcasting Act was drafted. In their wisdom, the founding great minds of our Act and the Constitution engraved these freedoms into both the Constitution, the Broadcast Act, and the Bill of Rights. The absolute link between journalism and democracy in our national context is made in Chapter 2 of the South African Broadcasting Act, which proclaims that the South African broadcasting system is owned by the people. It further states that the national government is acting through the minister and is responsible for the achievement of this purpose and the constitutional mandate of broadcasting policy development. Now, let me turn to the protest policy, which is the spark or the straw that broke the camel's back. The practices of journalism have been subverted, as I've said, at the SABC, and under Mr. Motswaneng's leadership, supported by the board, the state of affairs has been exacerbated. We are not saying here that it only began with Mr. Motswaneng. We are saying that he exacerbated the situation with his high-handedness and his crude manipulation of news or requests that we do likewise. In May 2016, a decision taken and implemented by former SABC COO Claudio Motsoneng smacked of pre-constitutional apartheid, the pre-constitutional apartheid era. In the build-up to the local government elections, residents continued to protest across the country to voice their dissatisfaction with slow pace of basic service delivery, among other issues. Mr. Motsoneng's response was to ban the broadcast of footage of those protests, thus muzzling the public voice. In a media statement, the SABC condemned the burning of public property, which, of course, should be condemned. However, it also should be covered. Mr. Motsoneng contended that the very act of broadcasting amounted to promotion of such acts. The High Court in Gauteng has since proved him wrong and us right. Journalism is crucial, therefore. I just want to jump forward and say that Mr. Motsoneng has imposed on us these bizarre notions of journalism. Every single law, every single prescript of journalism has been flouted. Our own credibility has been put on the line, and if we were simply to lie down and be complicit in our silence over these matters, we would have put our careers in harm's way. During this time that we've been in the newsroom, I'll just jump to the events of the 18th of July. I was in the newsroom on that day. I was in a usual editorial meeting. In editorial meetings are by their nature called for the exchange of ideas. People disagree and discuss what is to be the issue, the news of the day. Now let me explain to you the nature of the editorial meeting. It's a round table, and we are joined on the line by all the people in all the regions who are the news editors for the day or who are responsible for determining the news diary nationally, what is going to be listened to by over 25 million South Africans each day. So the editorial meeting is a meeting where we discuss stories and we put slugs to them. Slugs are praises of what, it's basically in short, honorable members, the name of a story. On this particular day, there was a story, slugged protest. And that story was the R2K story. It was the Right to Know campaign that was to protest at various SABC sites, I think in Durban and in Johannesburg. And R2K protests are normally peaceful pickets. And the head of news, the acting head of news at the time, he's now been ensconced as head of news, Mr. Simon Debelev, said we need to kill that story. That story must not happen. And no discussion happened because of that silence. Then I spoke out. I said I don't believe that we should kill the story because this is a matter that goes to the heart of the issues of freedom of expression, and this matter may well end up in the courts of the country, and we ought to cover the story. There was a little bit of discussion after that, and the then I said I would like to be recorded as dissenting and that I do not agree with the decision by the head of news to kill the story. Futa Krecha and Suna Fente did likewise and objected to the killing of the story. Soon after that, we were called in and were served with suspension letters. Now, I thought a meeting is for that, unless it's a monologue, it's for discussion of views. What that did was to say that there is only one permissible view in the newsroom, and it is the view of those mandated and instructed by Mr. Motsoeneng. Because when the head of news called us in to tell us that we were being suspended, I told him what he was doing was unlawful, it was incorrect and unjournalistic. And he said to me, I have my instructions. Now I understand that later in court he said that he was acting of his own volition and that he did not receive instructions to dismiss us and to suspend us. But I guess that's moot now. After that, we were called to, given less than 24 hours notice and called into a disciplinary hearing. At the disciplinary hearing, it was clear to us that there was no intention to proceed with the disciplinary hearing because there was a complete lack of seriousness at this disciplinary hearing. It actually did not feel much like a disciplinary hearing. And we were then dismissed after that, completely fired after that disciplinary hearing. We approached the Labour Court and we were reinstated. Since our reinstatement, none of the things that we objected to have changed. Instead, our colleagues began to see us as the sounding boards and the go-to people for their litany of complaints. As we approached Cape Town and as we opened up our phones, we were greeted by an avalanche of messages from hundreds of colleagues saying, our future is in your hands. Do not dare misrepresent us or let us down. We are hanging on this. So let me return to what happened when we returned to the SABC. One of the stories that that happened post our reinstatement, well, it didn't exactly happen post our reinstatement. It was brought to us post our reinstatement. It is the story of Minister Mutambi and what she did to our colleagues in the Limpopo area. A colleague of ours by the name of Gaugelo was sent to cover an imbizo in the northern province. He went and he asked the minister, as is his duty, questions about the migration to digital. And the minister, and I would like to quote from what the minister said to Gaugelo Mogalego, who in Lepalale Limpopo on Monday, the 30th of November 2015, asked the minister questions about the country's much delayed migration to the digital program. I quote from a recording of that conversation that he sent to me. We are launching an Imbizo Focus Week here, said the minister. We are not doing any digital migration. Or you didn't get the proper briefing, did you? Because you are losing it. You must grab these things. This interview on digital migration several times is very boring, on a serious note. And I wouldn't like you to play that clip. I have realized very late, I thought you're going to say this thing about, and then it becomes inaudible, because now is an Imbizo Focus Week. Thus, the minister, a political figure and a member of the ruling party, to our horror and chagrin, had, as usual, acquired a taste for interfering directly in the operations and choices of the newsroom, directing a journalist which clips to play, what to do, what not to play. After the interview, and the minister had done this, the Limpopo, and she had dived into the shoes of the Limpopo editors by indicating which clips the SABC would play or not, and thus put herself in the position to make editorial decisions in violation of both the Companies Act and the Broadcasting Act, with both frown on severely on shareholders who and board, executive board members who involve themselves in the operations of a business and violating the spirit of the Broadcast Act. Gaugelo was charged with bringing the SABC into disrepute by disrespecting the minister at the Imbizo. Gaugelo was fired. He is no longer our colleague. We submit that the manner in which he was dealt with was unusually cruel and callous. More importantly, it was unlawful and unconstitutional, and we continue to demand his reinstatement. No one in senior management pointed out that our colleague was doing his public service duty in asking about the communications minister and when the country would finally meet its obligations. We all know that we had missed the June 15 deadline to switch from analog to digital or terrestrial TV. So it seems that the minister was rather sensitive about this switch to digital, and there was an overreaction there because Gaugelo was summarily dismissed. His rights of freedom of expression and journalistic practice guaranteed in the Constitution and Bill of Rights were flagrantly flouted. His life was destroyed, and his career unjustly lies in tatters between emails on my phone and calls to my SABC 8 colleagues. Gaugelo is not alone. There are many Gaugelos in the regions of South Africa. Too many to go through today. Contrary to the requirements of the Broadcasting Act, which limit ministerial interference and directives, there has been more involvement of the Minister of Communications in the operations of the SABC. This was further cemented with the replacement of the SABC's Articles of Association with a Memorandum of Incorporation. I won't go much into that, but I will tell you the story of another one of our colleagues who has asked me to speak about this here. He is on record, and he is sworn in an affidavit in our Constitutional Court matter. His name is Moba Piri. And he stated under oath in an affidavit that there was a blatant attempt to editorially interfere with his coverage of the developments around the challenge to the vendor kingship. The close link between the minister and the vendor king is widely publicized. We are also aware of the pressure that our colleagues in Polokwane were put under in the coverage of this matter in particular, as well as the coverage around the VBS bank, which, we, as we all know, paid back the money. Political and editorial interference of the crudest kind has repossessed the SABC from Polokwane to Durban to East London and Cape Town, from radio to TV and digital. News has become deeply tainted by improper demands by politicians for journalists to be loyal to them and to do their bidding and conceal their misdeeds. We heard of a myriad of experiences by the in the regions. Now, let me explain the Moaba Puri affidavit in a little more detail. The female contender to the vendor throne was invited, together with the current acting king, Tony Mphephu, to the studio on our program called Question Time. The king, Mr. Mphephu, declined to participate. However, the contender to the throne, who is Ms. Masindi Mpepu agreed to come to the studio. Soon after she had arrived and she was on air, Moaba Piri, who is the executive producer of that program, was asked to evacuate her from the studio. And he was told, and on the speakerphone on the other side, he says in his affidavit, and he said so to me, that there was Mr. Motswaneng, there was the head of news, Mr. Tebele, and there was Ms. Nothando Maseko, the head of TV. And they said to him that as soon as it goes to ad break, they must get that woman out of the studio. And the anchor for the show was also persecuted, and he was even called in by his church for running a campaign against against the Vendor King. And their requests from journalists up there in the Vendor area that the harassment around the story became so intense that they approached the Commissioner of Police in that area. And the Commissioner was then, the police there were then also told not to take on these cases, and the journalists were told to hold off on their cases of harassment up there because the matter will be resolved amicably. They were told this by Ms. Sibulelo Ditlhakanyana, the head of radio, and the head of news, Simon Debele, who went up there to go and quell the storms that were happening up in that region. I will then narrate two of my own experiences very quickly, as I have only 8 minutes left. February, as we February 2014, as we approached the last election, the previous one. I was involved in a Bosberaad where the planning for the elections took place. At that meeting, Mahlatsi Gallants, who is now the head of the South African National Editors Forum, rose to say that she's inviting all of us as colleagues to tell Mr. Motswaneng that we will no longer take any improper political instructions anymore. We are done with it. There were all the senior leaders of our newsrooms across the country at that meeting, and they, Mashati was supported by Tammy Dixon of the Eastern Cape. I then supported them and agreed to refine our memo that would then go to Mr. Motswaneng, and it was a petition with a lot of support throughout the newsroom. We then refined it and sent it to Mr. Motswaneng, who came storming to the newsroom and said that he would act, he's not scared of us, he will act against us, and that the SABC has an agenda. At that meeting, Crosby Amos, who was later also disciplined under strange circumstances, read Mr. Motswaneng's 16(1)(a) of the South African Constitution, and some of us read him the Broadcasting Act and so on. So no one can say that he's unaware of what he's doing. And we said that drawing on these documents, we would no longer take any improper political instructions. And after promising to dismiss us, we understand that people went to Luthuli House to go and beg because letters of suspension had already been written for us. And the following day, Mr. Motswaneng came to the newsroom with his bodyguards, and he said he comes in the spirit of the Lord God, and he's wearing his priest's cap on that particular day. We must be professional, and we must go back and work. We had by then already discussed what to do if he was to dismiss us, and we had seriously considered going to black. I will explain what that is in the cross-questioning. I don't want to take any more of your time. We have a litany of experiences and stories. The sum total of it is that Broadcasting Act is no more. We live in a situation where the rule books, the Constitution, the law has been torn up, and we rule by might and might alone. Thank you, Honorable Members.
Thank you so much, ma'am. I deliberately moved it from 20 minutes to 30 minutes. Kribani, I'll do the same for you. It's just gone 5, so around about 5:30, I'll start looking at you with big eyes. You must know that by then it's your 30 minutes up. So go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Honorable Chair and members of this ad hoc committee, past and present colleagues of the SABC and the numerous people who have come to support us here today. My name is Kribani Pillay and I'm the executive producer of SAFM Current Affairs, which falls within the news division of the SABC. I co-manage a team of producers and senior producers and anchors who collectively produce daily weekday news and current affairs shows, namely AM Live, Midday Live and PM Live, and Weekend AM Live, which is the news and current affairs show broadcast on a Saturday and Sunday morning. SAFM is the only English national public service news, information and talk station in South Africa. As such, we reflect regional, national and international news stories. Our mandate is to educate, inform and entertain. But I'm also part of the group that's called the SABC 8, a group of journalists who could no longer accept the unsound editorial decisions taken within the newsrooms at the SABC. At great personal and professional risk, we spoke out in the hopes that the editorial independence and credibility of our newsrooms across the country would be restored. We chose to stand up because we felt that our newsroom had become a source of derision, despair, and criticism from the people we are fundamentally accountable to, and that is the South African public. If we didn't stand up, the costs of not defending an independent public broadcaster would be insurmountable. If we didn't stand up, we wouldn't be able to practice journalism with integrity. And if we didn't stand up, those in positions of power would grab more and more of our sacred editorial space until there was nothing left. If I didn't stand up, I would be complicit in depriving more than 20 million South Africans who solely rely on the SABC as their primary source of news and information, of balanced, factual information compiled by journalists dedicated to objectivity. For all these reasons, this is why we stood up. So on the 26th of May, without consultation, we heard via a media statement that the former Chief Operations Officer, Mr. Shlaudi Motsoeneng, decided to implement what has now become known as the protest policy. This meant that the SABC would no longer cover the violent protests against public institutions. So on Sunday, the 29th of May, the issue was tackled on the editor's program on SAFM Current Affairs. The editorial decision was questioned internally and came under attack not only by the media practitioners on the show, but also from our listeners. And the context of this was, if we weren't going to report that 30 schools in Vuani were burnt, how can we remain silent? The decision to keep such information from our listeners carried the hallmark of a state broadcaster under apartheid. On the 31st of May 2016, I, together with Futa Krecha, the executive producer of RSG Current Affairs, was summoned to a meeting. In attendance was Mr. Motsoeneng, the acting GCEO, Jimmy Matthews, the acting group executive of news, Simon Tebele, Anton Hirnes, who introduced himself as the advisor to the COO, the general manager of radio news, Sibulelo Ditlakanyane, and SABC spokesperson, Mr. Kaiser Khanyaho. At this meeting, Mr. Motsoeneng stated, and I quote, We are cleaning up the organization. People are doing their own stuff. There are many journalists outside that want to work for the SABC. The environment outside is bad. No person within the SABC is independent. The SABC is independent. This is the new SABC. You must adapt or find a job elsewhere. Editors Forum must go. It's advertising for rival newspapers. He added, and I quote, if people do not adhere, get rid of them. We cannot have people who question management. This is the last time we'll have a meeting of this kind. Mr. Kricher then asked Mr. Motsvaneng, what research or evidence was obtained to support the premise that the broadcasting of destruction of public property was a catalyst for more destruction of property? And this was Mr. Motsvaneng's reply, and I quote, you must defend the organization. No journalist is independent. The COO has final responsibility of news. If people do not dare get rid of them, we cannot have people who question management. Now, what really surprised us was the response we got from Mr. Jimmy Matthews. He said, it's cold outside. If you do not like it, you can go. You've got two choices, the door or the window. Following the meeting, Ms. Sibolelo Di Tlhakanyane asked me to accompany her to the office of the PBS general manager, Mr. Zoli Mapipa, where she informed him of Mr. Motsvaneng's decision to immediately cancel the editor's section of Weekend AM Live, thus reducing the show by an hour. Mr. Mapipa then alerted the SAFM station manager, Mr. Dennis O'Donnell. This decision was effective from the 5th of June 2016 to date. I've received hundreds of emails from listeners, many of whom have complained to the BCCSA. One of them is actually a Stellenbosch University Arts and Social Sciences lecturer, Anita Yonker, who formally complained to the BCCSA on 11 June 2016 and to ICASA on 27 September 2016 about Mr. Motsvaneng's unilateral decision to remove the editors, and I'm very happy to share that correspondence with the committee. With your permission, Honourable Chair, at this juncture, I would like to actually give a brief background to the program, The Editors. In my research, I haven't been able to establish the exact date that the program started, but a note from the station manager written in 1996 refers to the editors as having been on air for many years, at least since the dawn of democracy. The brief of the show was to always be to discuss with editors of newspapers and news organizations about how the media covered major stories of the week and to preview the forthcoming major stories. Now, it's important to remember that due to time constraints, current affairs can't cover every single story. So highlighting newspaper stories that we have not covered allows us to add value to our programming. For example, at the very first time when gang violence broke out in townships in Port Elizabeth, it was a local newspaper that had exclusive information, which we reflected in our newspaper slots and then subsequently added it into our news lineup. Now, the Broadcasting Act commits the public broadcaster to produce and broadcast, among other things, a plurality of views and a variety of news, information, and analysis. To this end, the editors fulfilled that requirement by providing of the expression of views from voices independent of the SABC. This diversity of voices and dissection of how the media did its job offered a platform for listeners to hear a very candid discussion about how stories and their varied treatments of stories take place. This program afforded audiences the opportunity to critique and interrogate the handling of stories. So by cancelling the show, Mr. Motsvaneng effectively silenced the diversity of views. Programs like The Editors are not peculiar to South Africa. It is common practice in local and international newsrooms to air such programs. Suffice to say that the show was running even before I got to the SABC. And Honourable Chair, I'm not saying that programs should never be cancelled. But what I am saying that shows come and go. But there needs to be valid reasons why they are cancelled. It would seem the only reason for the cancellation was that the program criticized the decision of Mr. Motsuneng's protest policy. The argument Mr. Motsuneng made that the program was promoting the sale of newspapers whose editors were interviewed is irrelevant because newspapers are not in direct competition with the broadcaster. And Mr. Motsuneng made this argument at the same time the SABC was promoting the Gupta-owned New Age newspaper through its New Age business briefings on SABC2. But our editorial woes did not start in May 2016. In February this year, a day before the State of the Nation address, I received an email saying there would be no analysis of President Zuma's address. My team was too embarrassed to call the analyst who was confirmed and already picked up her accreditation. I had to make the unfortunate call and cancelled her participation in the outside broadcast. And I registered my dissatisfaction with this decision. I protested to the general manager of Radio News, and her response was, we had no choice in the matter. This was one of many occasions when I was forbidden to include analysis in my programming. Another such occasion was the 23rd of August, when Parliament's Portfolio Committee on Communications met the SABC board. I was again instructed not to include analysis on that. So go to the 6th and 7th of June 2016. A news workshop was convened in Magaliesburg to discuss the SABC's coverage of the upcoming local government elections. Mr. Kricher, Mr. Mvoko, and I were in attendance. And at the workshop, Mr. Motsuneng made the following deeply concerning remarks, and I know this because I was the minute taker. So I quote, "Do not focus on negative stories. Reporters at the SABC do not know the world. When they report, they mislead listeners. Today, I'm going to talk to the press club, to all editors. I'm going to tell them that they cannot try to influence the SABC. I'm going to tell them they cannot tell us what to do. Look at your editorial policy. We have removed news and replaced with content. If you, as the SABC, mess up the organization, you mess up your life. I am in charge. News is now part of operations. We change the world. We must have news with content. I am in charge. You must adhere to my instruction. President Zuma is the president of the country. I do not regard him as the ANC. You cannot treat him as the same. We will give him more time. And you cannot question, you can question everyone, Mantashe, etc., except our president. We need to respect him, especially you, SABC. I expect you all to align with my instruction," unquote. I've been a journalist for 16 years. 12 of those years have been at the public broadcaster, and never before have I experienced such political, editorial interference and deliberate manipulation of news content. And most concerning was the timing of these decisions, which came nearly weeks before the local government elections. 2 weeks later, on the 23rd of June 2016, after debating the merits of the protest policy at the National Radio Daily Conference, my colleagues, Mrs. Tandeka Kubule Mbeki, Mr. Futa Krecher, and Ms. Suna Fenter were suspended. On the 26th of June 2016, I, together with Ms. Busi Ntuli, who's seated behind me, she's the executive producer of the TV Current Affairs show, Special Assignment, and Mr. Jacques Steenkamp, a former investigative radio news reporter, wrote to Mr. Motsuneng. In that correspondence, we registered our displeasure and increasing concern about the developments in our newsrooms. Our letter referred to, in particular, the developments in the last 2 weeks of May 2016, where erroneous and unlawful editorial decisions heightened a sense of fear amongst our staff. the three of us expressed our disappointment that although the news conference should be a space for editorial engagement, debate, and the usual contestation of ideas, journalists were suppressing their views. They were becoming afraid to frankly discuss their views, which had a direct impact on the SABC's ability to comply with the Broadcasting Act. In addition, the decision to move the newspaper slots from AM Live and the editor's program from Weekend AM Live amounted to what I considered, and the three of us, political censorship and favoring a group within the African National Congress. We believed that the Southern decisions contradicted our governing policies and legislation, namely the SABC Editorial Code, the South African Broadcasting Act, and the South African Constitution. As journalists, we need to take seriously our obligations in terms of the policies of the SABC. It's a public institution which is important for the promotion of our democracy. We felt aggrieved because the decisions taken tainted the image of our institution and our journalistic integrity, and continues to be compromised by unconstitutional pronouncements that erode the credibility of the SABC and the journalists. In that letter, we voiced our disagreement with the suspension of our colleagues who are merely expressing their right to freedom of expression by simply debating and assessing the newsworthiness of events as expected. So consequently, we viewed those suspensions as acts of victimization. We were shocked by these pronouncements that fundamentally deprived the public of the right to know the whole story about developments in their communities and to display such stories in a responsible manner as per ICASA and BCCSA requirements. These pronouncements effectively render our newsrooms incapable of providing compelling audio and visual content that educate and inform the public and to disseminate balanced and accurate information. The omission of relevant audiovisual content and analysis is tantamount to propaganda. Ms. Ntuli, Mr. Steenkamp, and I requested an urgent meeting with Mr. Motsoeneng to discuss our concerns in the hope of a resolution. Our primary interest in sending this letter was to find some kind of solution. We hoped that the meeting would also reinstate the editor's program and the newspaper slots to restore our public image and uphold our integrity in the eyes of those we are meant to serve. We did not get a response to that letter a request for a meeting. Instead, we received letters of disciplinary hearings, and then we were subsequently dismissed. Despite our win at the Labour Court and reinstatement on the 27th of July 2016, we've had to endure much criticism from those who've benefited from the Motsoeneng regime and implemented his unlawful instructions. Some of our colleagues said we were grandstanding. External musicians accused us of being against transformation. As recently as last week, the acting GCEO, Mr. James Aguma, told the media that we were merely discontented journalists. It's been a tough time for the SABC 8. The stress of the events has taken a personal toll on each of us, most especially Suna Fenta and Futa Krieger. But we remain resolute and committed to this cause. Suna in particular is the youngest amongst us, but her strength and bravery despite the threat is a promising sign for journalism of our future. In our industry, it takes years for journalists to win the respect of fellow journalists and the public we serve. When audiences tune in, it's a sign that they trust in our news gathering process because we've gone about it with integrity and in good faith. Now, Mr. Motsoeneng's unlawful and unsound editorial directives have raged against that, hurting our news delivery and causing severe reputational damage to our credibility as individuals. To me, it was personally damaging and painful that the editors and the newspaper slot was canned under my watch. And on a most personal level, it's been a very trying time for me as a public broadcaster because as a journalist, one must always be driven by conscience. That is why I could no longer remain silent, no matter the consequences. There are many at the corporation who find themselves similarly compromised, and yet they still try to do their jobs to the best of their ability under trying circumstances every day. Mr. Motsweneng's instructions to me went directly against the International Journalism Code of Conduct, the editorial code of the SABC, and the legally binding documents of the South African Constitution and the Broadcasting Act, and my own personal values. These instructions by Mr. Motsweneng have created a rift between us in the office, between those who want to adhere to the Broadcasting Act and then those who fear losing their jobs. So a lot has been made about us, the SABC 8, but we are only 8 among hundreds of journalists, producers, anchors, technical staff, cameramen and women, editors, logistic and admin staff at SABC News who remain loyal to the brand of SABC News and in turn the South African public. Now, as we headed here to Parliament, many colleagues stopped us in the corridors, as Tandeka told us, when we landed at the airport. We received tons of, I think it was 53 messages just on WhatsApp alone, you know, pledging their support, not least because they too realized that this parliamentary process could be momentous in saving the SABC. Unethical editorial decisions attack the very core of the public broadcaster's mandate. They have robbed the public of the right to access uncensored information and undermined our right to do our jobs. But this could be a turning point. The fact that we've come to Parliament here today to share our experiences with you means that someone is prepared to listen. And not all is lost if an urgent intervention is made now. The SABC is an institution that can be saved, that we can be proud of again, if the will exists to throw it a lifeline. I thank you, honourable members.
Tandeka and Kribani. On behalf of every member of this committee here, and I think on behalf of many South Africans, please accept our apologies for what you went through. I think we collectively salute your courage, and thank you for coming to appear before us, even in the face of all those challenges. Thank you very much. I shall open up to members. We had indicated that we'll start with you, Honorable Chauke. Your 5 minutes starts now, and we'll end with you, Honorable Mukwena. And thereafter, the second group will join us after a few minutes of a leg break. We are running late, as I indicated earlier on, Honorable members, but you'll all have your 5 minutes. Honorable Chauke.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. It's one area that in the last 22 years obvious, of my work doing oversight, I've never come across such a kind of a situation where you can see the collapse of democracy in our watch. But nonetheless, it's a painful situation, but I take it from the point that the chair has sort of come. In your presentation, you have not made mention of the board of SABC, both of presentations. Maybe I want to hear from you as to what has been the role of the board with all of these frustrations, interference, intimidation, threats, and all of that. What has been the role of the board? Maybe I can start with that one first.
The board is obliged, and it's duty-bound, and it's supposed by law to take care of the independence of the newsroom. The board has failed dismally in this respect. Under the leadership and the chairmanship of Mrs. Ellen Tshabalala, I had one night a harrowing light. Brian Molefe, who was then head of Transnet, came to the newsroom for an interview. He was asked normal journalistic questions by an anchor reporting to me, Ms. Frances Hurd. These questions related to the purchase of locomotives by Transnet. And she asked him normal questions that he could have anticipated and that were in the public domain. Instead, an altercation happened on air where he was extremely aggrieved. We had to come out of that interview elegantly, and when we stood down, he left the building. I was home, and I was called back to the office. I was called by my relatives, my best friend, the minister's brother, to come back to the office, because whatever I have done to anger Mr. Molefe, I would be advised to stop it. I returned to the office, and the security guards at the gates downstairs were shivering, and they said, "Tandeka, is that your guest?" And I said, I understand I have a guest here tonight. Turned out Mr. Molefe was waiting for us in the upstairs visitors' waiting room. He had his finger in Frances Hurd's face, and he was asking her if it's the shape of his nose that warranted such a line of questioning. I then said to him that Frances had asked perfectly legitimate questions that he could have anticipated. He was in the company of a gentleman, young man called Sibonelo Sigonyela. Mr. Molefe then said, "We must go and see Sis Ellen," as he put it. And I said, "Who is that?" He said, "Don't you know your chairman? Come, and we need to go upstairs to the 27th floor, to whichever floor she was on. It was very high." For the first time, I didn't use my entrance thing to buzz in. The gate simply opened, and I was escorted with his bodyguards and his people to that high office. Before going there, I had phoned Jimmy Matthews to say, "I'm now being taken to the chairman's office. What is your comment? Because I can't go to the chairman jumping over a whole number of hurdles." He said, "Well, go and let me know." And when I arrived there, the secretary of the board of the SABC was there. She's the same secretary, still secretary of the board now. The entire evening was an assault on journalism and on myself. I was told by Mr. Sigonyela, who was my former student from Rhodes, and by Mr. Molefe and the chairman of the board, that we think we are gods. We think we can question anybody, and that I should sanction, gag, or discipline, or fire Frances. I said I will do no such. She's a highly trained MBA qualified journalist. I would neither gag her, nor discipline her, nor prevent her from doing her work. It was a long night. We left there very late, and what I can just say for sure is that neither the chairman nor Mr. Molefe distinguished themselves that night and declared themselves enemies of journalism. Another incident involved the chairman at what we call rediffusion. It was Chairman Ellen Tshabalala. She told us at that rediffusion, every SMS, every email, every phone call, we're listening. This is a national key point. Now, how are we supposed to conduct journalism for anonymous sources? How are we supposed to protect the integrity and the sanctity of our sources as journalists under those circumstances? But this, she told us at a rediffusion. Rediffusion is a system much like you have in George Orwell's 1984, where Mr. Motsoeneng or the chairperson beam themselves on screens throughout the corporation and throughout the country, saying and making various pronouncements. normally assaults on journalism. The board is complicit in the death of journalism at the SABC.
Thank you, ma'am. Yeah, we'll try. But there's still another round. We'll try and squeeze them all in because it's
Chairperson, I would like to thank them for being here so that we can really get to the root cause and root at the bottom of all of this. Could you please just indicate to us, was there a need for a change in editorial policy? And if so, what was the process that was conducted prior to those amendments having been presented, I believe, during February this year to the board? During, by the way, meetings that seem to have been incorrect meetings of the SABC board, and apparently they adopted the editorial, the changes. Could you please just elaborate further on that? Do you know what sort of prompted that, and what was the role of the acting group executive during your most difficult time? It was Mr. Jimmy Matthews. Did he change his attitude from being promoted? Could you please elaborate further on that?
Let me speak to the editorial policy of 2016. It's our recommendation as journalists, representing hundreds of other journalists in the newsroom, that the editorial policy of 2016 is unlawful. It was unlawfully adopted. Its procedures circumvented many discussions, and in fact, Honorable Killian, with respect, we should be asking you what happened to the process. We should be asking Parliament, because every policy of that kind needs to come past Parliament, and it has to pass muster here with the representatives of the South African people prior to it being given the stamp of approval by the board and all others, and given to us to execute as policy. Now, the editorial policy of 2016 is flawed in four significant ways, and I'll be brief. The first way in which it is flawed is that it replaces news with content. What is content? I can't for the likes of me, and I've taught journalism a lot throughout the years, I can't understand what content is. News, I know, and news is what journalists do. Content, maybe it's for entertainers and, it's a dingo and generations and so on. So we don't understand what content is. And what is the role of content in an editorial policy? So that's highly inappropriate in the first place. So it means that it kills journalism, basically, this editorial policy. The second thing is, there is at the heart of this editorial policy of 2016 a referral upwards. And that referral upwards installs Mr. Motsoeneng, as he put it, as the alpha and the omega. It installs him at the apex of the system of editorial decision-making. Now, that is improper because universally, the world over, journalism makes a distinction, and it's a sacred distinction, between those who run the commercial operations, the advertising, and the administrative functions of a media house and the newsroom. There ought to be a Chinese wall. It is as sacred to journalism as the separation of powers is sacred to democracy. So by collapsing that referral upwards, instead of giving it to somebody like perhaps a public ombudsman who is a journalist of high standing in the journalistic community, or a public editor, or an editor of editors, the editor-in-chief becomes Mr. Motsoeneng, and the 2016 editorial policy shifted it from the CEO, and it seemed to me that Mr. Jimmy Matthews complied with that arrangement, or didn't, to my knowledge, object to it. It's highly inappropriate. The other thing that is wrong with the 2016 editorial policy is the manner in which it was adopted, circumventing many consultation processes and not going through the right. The way it was inaugurated at the Bourse Berard when we first heard of it, it was a display of utter bravado. This is not a policy for journalists to be proud of or to think to adhere to. It must be struck down. It's unconstitutional and it's improper.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Members, let me just warn you, you're going to have only one bite at this hearing. So choose your questions. I don't think you're going to put into it two questions here. Honorable Roliwe.
Thanks, Chair. Ms. Kubule, I just want us to go to page 11 of your presentation. It talks to the appointment of Ms. Nothando Maseko, where it is said that it was part of transformation initiative to empower women. In the previous witness we had before you, there was a saying where Mr. McLeod was quoted as saying he can't be told what to do by a woman. What is your understanding of his stance against women?
Honorable Loliwe, Mr. Motswaneng is a man who makes the rules, breaks the same rules. So I can't, for the likes of me, reconcile some of his statements. Because when he appointed Ms. Nothando Maseko, he announced that Ms. Nothando Maseko has been appointed as head of television news, and she was formerly the executive producer of Morning Live. He said Ms. Maseko will also be an understudy to Mr. Matthews to take over the role from him when he leaves. He also expressed his happiness and pride that he had appointed to senior roles several women.
I hope you leave the document you have promised, because you have a note there which is saying document attached. The second area I want us to go to is on page 12. Bullet number 4 of your recommendations, where you are saying the possible appointment of a news ombudsman who will defend the newsroom, blah, blah, blah. What is it that the current one is not doing, which needs his or her replacement?
Honorable Loliwe, thank you for the question. There is no news ombudsman inside the corporation. The news ombudsman idea as a recommendation arose out of research that we as the SABC 8 conducted and discussions that we've had with journalists from other countries about how to protect and ruggedize a newsroom and solidify it from political interference. We brought it here as a recommendation that may work, as many across the world have tried. For example, in the process of denazifying the media in Germany after the Second World War, the institution of an internal ombudsman to whom the referral upwards post would go, where there are disputes as to what is a story, story treatment, and disputes about how a story should be approached, particularly political stories. The ombudsman, ma'am, is there to guard against bias and to ensure that news is balanced and fair. The ombudsman is normally an individual who is beyond reproach, much like the public protector is to those aggrieved by mistreatment or maladministration in the public sector or by public institutions. The ombudsman is the editor of all editors. It's to him or her that we go in cases of dispute. And the ombudsman often is a journalist of high standing and can be an ex officio member of the board, can participate in the ethics and social committee of the board, and also can be appointed transparently. This would help in a highly polarized newsroom such as ours. It's our humble submission. We are uncertain as to whether it's appropriate for us to make this submission, but it is our contribution perhaps to the solutions, having traveled this journey that we've traveled.
Thank you very much. Unfortunately, Honorable Kola.
Chair, thank you very much. Madam Kogulembeki and Pilei, first of all, I want to say you are a phenomenal woman indeed, and I'm very proud of you for being courageous. And as a member of the African National Congress, I want to tell you that I'm appalled and extremely horrified to hear what you've just taken us through. Having said that, I just want to know from you, where do you think, or do you feel that you are failed by, you were failed by the board, the minister, and the portfolio committee in terms of the degeneration of governance at SABC to a point where we deprived our people or we stunted our people? Because I believe strongly that if you are going to come up with these kinds of policies, you are actually stunting our people and prohibiting them to graduate to the next level that is envisaged by this democracy.
Honorable Khoza, I'll take that question. Yes to all of your questions. Parliament let us down. The board let us down. The minister let us down. Our acting GCO at the time, Jimmy Matthews, let us down. All of these people sold out journalists and sold out journalism. For example, Mr. Matthews has an illustrious journalism career. He's worked his way up from a cameraman to a reporter to a producer, etc. But when he got to the position of acting GCEO, it was like all of that was out the window, in his words. Take the window or take the door. The minister failed us. She interfered unlawfully. Mr. Motsoeneng certainly failed us. It was like he didn't have a clue what was in the Broadcasting Act. The board failed us because they allowed Mr. Motsoeneng to unilaterally do what he wanted. With all due respect, Parliament failed us. On the 23rd of August 2016, members of the Portfolio Committee on Communications sat back and just accepted what the board said. And they called us names in that hearing or in that meeting, and nobody stood up. They called us unethical, and they called us liars. We've been through enough already. We're not prepared to put the gauntlet down just yet. We're in for the long haul. But it is now up to you to make the change. We appeal to you.
Would you then agree that this propagandist approach does not only undermine democracy, but hits directly on the bottom line?
Oh, definitely.
And
absolutely.
And sustainability. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ma'am Khoza. Mafanda?
Thanks, Chair. I too am extremely appalled by what I've heard. I am very pleased today that the Western Cape High Court has ruled that Mr. Motsoeneng cannot return to the SABC. I am equally appalled by the behavior of the Minister of Communications, but because this is an inquisitorial process, I'll reserve my comments about what should happen to her. Now, the GE of news while all of this is happening, it's Sophie Mugwena. Who is it?
Simon Tebele.
Simon Tebele. So he was part of what I see as an enforcer for Mr. Motsoeneng. Who were the other enforcers besides Mr. Tebele?
On my part, the other enforcers is the general manager of Radio News, Ms. Sibulelo de Tlakanyane. On yours, Tandeka?
Based on my specific experiences, Ms. Nothando Maseko would say things like she doesn't agree with the way we cover the currency, and particularly after 9/12, the Nenengate incident, we had much to discuss, so I would say that she's one of the enforcers. Also, I would put Ms. Sophie Mukwena along.
Yes, could you all provide us with the list of those enforcers? I think along with Mr. Mutsuneng and everybody else who must be held accountable, I think those enforcers too must be held accountable. And then in terms of the revised editorial policy, were you ever, I needed this to be quite clear, were you ever consulted as news producers, as editors, in it being revised?
Returned to the broadcaster after a bit of a break working at other broadcasters. So by the time I had returned, the consultation process was done. So that was February 2015. Can you elaborate from that point onwards?
I'm not too certain of the dates, but there was a circular inviting us to comment.
Can I come back later to my other question?
But there's another second one. No. Mr. Honorable Masani.
Chair, thank you. To Madame Bilei and Kubule. Apologies. In your positions, one would assume that you would do some uncovering of persons in your space. Oh, that thing now has started, Chair. And let me just conclude my question. Perhaps when it is fixed, they will respond to the question. Who is Mr. Mutsuneng? And who is Mr. Aguma?
Law unto themselves?
No, I know, but who are they? I would like to know them. How do I locate them? Who are these people?
Well, Mr. Mutsuneng is, as of today, I'm not sure whether he will adhere to the Western Cape High Court ruling, but Mr. James Aguma is the acting GCEO of the corporation.
Yes, I know those positions.
Yeah.
But I said uncover. We know
the background.
Who these people are and what their agendas are at SABC? I think that's how.
Honorable Mashango, sir, it's difficult to answer your question, but we can attempt. Mr. Mutsuneng has been in the SABC system for most of his career or all of his career. I understand that he began in the Homeland administration and then entered into our system through that. We journalists, we're a strange fraternity because the barriers to entry are very low. We are not like doctors or lawyers where you have to be and where you have to go through a certain licensing process and so on. So I guess he became one of us, even though we don't regard him as a journalist. We perhaps see him as one who sells broadcasting technologies and the ability to beam them to the highest political bidder.
Chair, the next question that I would like to ask. In your presentation, you raised the benefactors of Mr. Mutsuneng. Are you able to locate them
and perhaps bring them to our attention?
Well, one of the things that we had experienced is at the time of our SABC editorial interference campaign was the same time as the 90-10 policy that was implemented. So the musicians had confused the editorial fight with the fight for the local content. So as our fight was unfolding, the musicians held a press briefing not far from the SABC and said that they would lay down their lives for Mr. Motswenning, that the eight of us were against transformation. They conflated two ideas, and they basically confused and swayed the public interest that the eight of us were against the 90-10 local content, whilst our fight had nothing to do with that. Our fight was about editorial independence. So that would be one of the backers. There have been very brazen colleagues who have told us that we are grandstanding in the office. I suppose, you know, you could consider them to be a backer of Mr. Motsuneng, but I don't have proof. But I'd be happy to give it some more thought and come back to the committee.
If you could just elucidate one or two things that you believe if we can do, will rescue you from this heist.
Honorable Masango, sir, thank you very much for that. We look forward to putting certain ideas forward as to how we can right the wrongs as a broadcaster and return to a healthy broadcasting environment. The first thing that we need to address is the issue of the damage to the broadcaster wrought by the anti-intellectualism. Journalism is essentially about the creation of knowledge, and it is the first record of history. So it goes to the very root of epistemology, and we need highly trained journalists. We need journalists who can discern and learn and adapt to a fast-evolving world. If it is possible in any way to redeem the newsroom, we can do so through a fast-tracked, intense massification of global training for the newsroom, so that our journalists know that universally this is how things ought to be. And I'm not talking about only exposing our journalists to Western-type newsrooms, but newsrooms throughout the world. And I'm not talking about only exposing them to newsrooms that operate for profit, because we are not that. We are newsrooms that operate for the public and for the people and for development. To expose them to all the ethoses of journalism, to the buffet of world journalism, as a way of, you know, the brain drain at the SABC is profound, and you can see it in the quality of what we produce. So please, if we can have that kind of training ethos after the cinders of this, what's going on. The second thing I quickly want to say is that please investigate the ombuds idea. And thirdly, the Broadcasting Act is exceedingly clear on training, and it is also exceedingly clear on the responsibilities of the board. So if the social committee is not discussing ethics and the contribution of core business to society, what is it discussing? Handing out houses? So, you know, if the social and ethics committee could be extended to include the obligations of the board to actually look after the health of the newsroom, it would be helpful. Thank you.
Very quickly on my wish list, I'd like the editor's program to return back on SAFM, the newspaper slots as well, and I don't want phone calls saying no analysis.
Yeah.
Honorable Schwartz, please put your mic off, Mr. Osano.
Thank you, Chairperson. And again, from my side, and I just want to join the sentiments expressed by other members, almost a sense of outrage. We've heard in the newspaper, but to hear it firsthand from you, I'm absolutely appalled at the way you've been treated. The way Mr. Molefe, who gives him the right? Who gives him the right to come to the SABC? Chairperson, this must stop. We as MPs have got to do something about this. We need to hold the minister accountable. We need to hold Mr. Motsoeneng and all senior officials accountable. We owe you an apology. We have erred and not exercised our oversight. That having been said, with the Nanny Gate, what was the direct instruction to you, considering that last year this time our bond market and equities lost 500 billion rand? I'd like you just to clarify that. And then secondly, to help us going forward, the recommendations that you've mentioned are very helpful. The one that I, and you've mentioned a few, the one I'd like you to refer to is the process of appointing senior news executives in the head office and the regions. If you'd like to spend a bit of time explaining how that could help you. We believe the truth will set us free, and that's what journalism is all about. Thank you.
You've got 4 minutes in your response.
As to the issue of Mr. Molefe, well, he's been crying, we've been crying, so I guess things even out in the end. With regards to I'm trying to find a way to explain it wasn't so much an instruction, it was a lot of leaning on to say refrain from the narrative that says the president crashed the currencies, the equity markets and the bond markets, and with us explaining that the rand generally trades in a basket of emerging market currencies. And on that day, the rand was behaving uniquely in a way that cannot be explained other than the
Thank you. Thank you.
And hopefully the break will allow it to cool off. So it's
Mr. Swart's question that we will repeat because it was halfway through, and then Mr. Makwena's question. But I am asking Rivani and Tandeka, please, if we can respect the 5 minutes, because it's 5 minutes both ways, and then we'll break for lunch, I mean for dinner. Hopefully then it'll have cooled down and then it won't happen anymore. Please repeat your question, Mr. Swartz, because I think it got lost.
Yes, I think you started to answer the Nanny Gate, but so we dealt with that. But just on your recommendations, if you'd like to unpack the issue of the appointment, the process of appointing senior news executives in the head office and the regions, and any other issue you might want to, such as the healthy separation between editorial operations and the executive as well. Your recommendations, I thought, were very helpful going forward. Thank you.
I think that the Labour Relations Act, if it's followed properly and the requirements that we advertise posts, that the process is transparent, if those are followed properly, then you know, then you're going to get, a sense of having a meritocracy would return. I would like to think more deeply about it and perhaps write to you later.
Yes, and then just on the issue where you indicate the possibility of an investigation into the extent of political interference, we've now heard in the SABC the lack of healthy separation between editorial operations and the executive. Would you say that that investigation, that is basically what we are doing here as well as part of this inquiry, as well as the interference of the minister in the editorial content of the SABC? So if you would like to add to that, feel free to, but also later you can add it in writing as well, because that is the heart of this inquiry now, bearing in mind you've already had an investigation by the public protector some years ago as well.
Honourable Swartzer, the distinction between the editorial and the executive and business side of the newsroom needs to be restored. And one way of doing that is scrapping the requirement that the CEO or the COO are editor-in-chief, and installing somebody who is essentially a news and editorial person, but a person of high standing with a dotted line perhaps to the CEO, with a dotted, well, ex officio member of the board, as well as he's the one who represents us to the BCCSA, as well as perhaps he could sit on the Ethics and Social Committee of the board, as well as have some kind of relationship with Parliament. We don't want to ruffle or go against the grain of existing legislation, because we feel that if adhered to, it is really good. Those are tentatively our recommendations. The other thing about appointments is that the process of vetting the board needs to be perhaps a little more transparent and a little more vigorous.
I thank you very much, Honourable Makwena.
Thank you, Chair. I would strongly recommend that I be given 30 minutes on this issue. thank you very much. I've been following your story, and it's interesting. The issues that you raise in your input, in terms of political interference in news broadcasting, are not new. And I'm in no way belittling your input, because I think it is valuable, because what it does is that it heightens the issues. What is new, though, is the depths to which we've gone. I think we're at the new low now. But you know, it's what happens when democracies begin to crumble. It sort of reminds one of the rise of Joseph Goebbels in Hitler's Third Reich. This is what happens when dictatorships begin to develop. What I find interesting in the stage that we're in is that we know that political interference has been there, but it's been party political. The new law now is the fact that it's now going into factional issues, that it is now beginning to pinpoint individuals within organization and punting their names. And I think this is an interesting argument, especially for the ruling party, that needs to be investigated, because I think we're beginning, and it's also interesting, because in the crumble of democracy, key institutions begin to crumble too. We've seen what's happened to Eskom, Transnet, SABC, and so on. And it's interesting, ironical, that Brian Molefe will come into the SABC and be pointing fingers at people while on TV, while we're discussing Eskom, he's crying. We're in a very interesting time. We're in an extremely interesting time. Now, I'm glad that the production floor is here. I'm going to ask my questions. The other way that this sort of stage then begins to crumble democracy is during elections. Now, one of the executives had once said that there was a moratorium that the EFF must not be covered. And I'm not speaking just for EFF, please do forgive me. But I need to know, at that level of elections, what kind of political interference that would border on interfering with the character of democracy that we hold in this country are you experiencing at the SABC? And then I'll come to the next question.
Unfortunately, you're not going to come to the next one because you get such a long input. You've got just 1 minute, and I'm going to stop you after 1 minute.
I think I was with Mr. Matthews on ENCA or ETV when he made the admission that he had been party to a decision to starve the EFF of coverage. Now, we've already said this repeatedly. That is not the journalist's custom. This should not be our habit. And we look forward to the day where we no longer receive those instructions. Thank you.
50 seconds. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. But the extent to it, I'm not just talking about the EFF, the extent to which that kind of interference is happening.
Honorable Mokwena, so we've, in terms of content of our presentation, that job is actually, we've given it to our esteemed Lucanio Galata, who has all those examples, including that of your own party. Thanks.
All right. It's been a long, hard day. One more to go after this. It is now in the Upper six. Can we have a leg stretch until 7 o'clock? And we will reconvene at 7 o'clock and be out of here by 8:30, 9 o'clock at the latest. That's your choice. Otherwise, you work on Christmas Day, Ms. Van Damme. Remember your Christmas Day. All right. Can members please reconvene in E24? E209 immediately. Immediately we finish. here. And to the rest of our colleagues, we reconvene at 7 o'clock sharp, and then we will, at 7 o'clock, take input from Mr. Mvoko and Mr. Kalasi, very much in the same way. And this time, we're going to start with you, Mr. Makwena, because I think we ended with you. So you're going to be the first one, and we'll end with Mr. Chauke. Thank you very much. We'll see each other at 7 o'clock.